Yo, Christian masculinists. Today we come to you with a current events episode. You've probably heard Melania Trump, aka Melanoma, talking about how murdering babies is good. It happened yesterday. I was reacting to reactions on it before I even know what was going on. I got in a very theoretical abortion subsidiarity semi-debate with Edward Faeser on Twitter, and I didn't even know that everyone was reacting to the abortion Trump. It's been very pathetic, kind of leftward shift on this issue, which has been ongoing over the last month or two. I thought it was just that, but I didn't even think that this is a new impulse of information, a new reaction to new stimuli. Anyway, Mike, Will, Nick, the CMAS boys, I'm going to play for you this clip by Melania Trump, but everybody take a first blush here. Donald Trump shook the world in 2016 by being the anti-politics politician. He's like, I'm just going to say dope NASCAR, you know, WWE fight night kinds of things, MMA, red-blooded American kinds of things, and like F politicians. F politics. And he won. He won the championship of the world with it. Then in 2020, he pretty much stayed the course. And whatever happened, happened. I'm not even going to say it so we get a video taken down. But he didn't have the success he wanted in 2020. Now in 2024, he's set up to win. I mean, Kamala and that other dude are paper tigers. And now, and it's like he's trading it all in. Well, what do you guys say first? I guess I'll start with the American, Nick, and then Mike, and then Will, moving in order of less Americanness.
yeah, I saw Trump's all bold, all caps tweet about not doing a federal abortion ban. And if I didn't know about subsidiarity, I would have been like, gosh, this is just the worst thing ever. I can't believe this guy's pro-abortion. And he's not. He's okay with it in, you know, certain circumstances. But then I remembered subsidiarity. I'm like, okay, actually, that's a good thing. It is a states' rights issue. It should totally be up to the states. I like that. Good job. And then I saw just that black and white video of Melania passing my feed. I had no idea what it said. Wasn't paying attention to it at all until you sent it. Then was reminded that she's a Catholic. So this is probably something we'll end up getting into today, but the utility, the social good of excommunicating public facing Catholics for doing something like this, for their salvation, and then for the salvation of the public, the church.
Yeah. What do you say, Mike? And I'll say this. I think Trump is and always has been pro-abortion. So I don't think he gives an F about subsidiarity. We'll have to distinguish today. But also the good of excommunication, just making someone STFU, which is all we want from it's all she did for 8 years. Now she opens her big dumb mouth. And it's like, oh, this is why you're just like a you're trying to be a spokesmodel. Just be quiet. She wouldn't do it for 8 years, and now she does it, and it's the worst message in the world. I'll play it as soon as you I'll get a shot here. What do you say, Mike?
It's better to be to remain silent and be thought of as a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. And that's kind of how I feel about Melania. Is like, you were silent, everybody thought you were this based Catholic woman or whatever the lefty weirdos thought she was, on the opposite side. This was incredibly disappointing, but also kind of unsurprising. Like, all she had to do was just shut her mouth. All she had to do was just not say anything. And I almost start to wonder, like, what is their marital dynamic like that even Donald Trump allowed this to happen to her to come? This was really bad. And I think he started to show his hand in 2020 with Operation Warp Speed and all that stuff. And I still think he's the better of the two, of course. Now we're essentially voting for the lesser of two evils, not we, as in I'm Canadian, but looking over the fence at my American brethren. I think Father Ripperger was recently on a round table discussion with, I think it was Father Ambrose and Gabby Castillo. And he said it's actually not immoral to vote for the lesser of the two evils because you're voting for one that is going to preserve the most good. And so I'm trying to keep my sort of mind fixated there. But this was a giant black mark on his campaign to me. All she had to do was shut up and she didn't. And it was an epic fail. And especially with that dumb accent, too. It was just double whammy.
Yeah, Tim, your point that he's always been pro-abortion, I think that's the most important one. And the question is, with the two-party system, do you really have a genuine alternative? Even the conservatives are just fake conservatives, and it's liberalism when you get deep down to the most important issues. So who is going to make abortion illegal? Who's going to make the widespread propagation of pornography illegal? Who's going to make easy divorce illegal? All of those things inflict grave social evils in the way that Aquinas described would justify using the power of the state, like to mitigate the damage. No one wants to do any of that. You don't really have a genuine choice. It's the illusion of choice. And that's why the political regime is so good at what it does. On the surface, Trump seems like he's all American, NASCAR, MMA, whatever it is. But beneath that, it's the same.
Yeah. I mean, look at it this way. We just celebrated a birthday in the house yesterday for my twins. They're like the least likely human beings to ever do this. But some kids, I'm told on movies and TV, on their birthday, try to get away with a lot more brattiness. Like, I mean, I genuinely have the most like grateful kid, particularly the twins.
Such
grateful kid. Yeah. But like, imagine if you had one of those kids that was like, I'm going to try to like punch dad or say a cuss word or get away with something that I couldn't get away with the rest of the year because it's my birthday. That is Trump this time with the abortion issue. And I do want to talk about subsidiarity today because, like I said, I spent all day saying I don't like Trump. We were doing birthday stuff and we were doing a birthday hike. And I'm like, I don't like Trump. But here's why. It's absolutely retarded to make this a globalist issue. I mean, you know, we have to deal with it at the hemispheric level. It's like, no, let's go to Catholic teaching. You deal with this at the smallest level that has the competency for it. Anything bigger than that, any wider valence is immoral. So I did that. And then I didn't know what they're like. I opened up the show talking about, I didn't know that Melania had done this retarded tweet, which I'll play right now, message and tweeted it out and put it on all socials. But I just started realizing, oh, Trump with the abortion nonsense is the little kid on its birthday trying to get away with as much as he can, because, you know, with as much pro-abortion stuff to pick up as much of the centrist energy and the center left constituency on abortion as he can. And to do so, I'm the dad of the hypothetical bratty birthday kid, not one of my kids, who's like slapping me in the face like, haha, it's my birthday. Like, what are you going to do? Vote for Kamala? It's like, listen to me, dumb fuck. I will stay home. I will not vote for your dumbass. You already did Project Warp Speed. So I don't care about the lesser of two evils. And the funny thing is, Ed Fazer's probably stultified because I've been saying, no, the proper way to deal with this isn't, it's at the American state level, federalized state level, 50 states. I moved to the state that literally gave that ended Roe. And I moved to that state a year before they did it. And I was like, this is the most conservative state in the country. Mississippi overturned Roe. They provided the challenge that went all the way up and they counted to five or counted to six on the federal court. In Dobbs versus Jackson, Women's Health. Jackson's a Mississippi city. And all of the red states overturned after Dobbs overturned Roe, they all made abortion illegal, just like we said they would. So Ed Fazer's on Twitter saying, no, they wouldn't do that. I'm like, this ship is years old. What are you talking about? It's all cope for people that live in evil red communist states that don't want to leave, like Sohrab and Omari with New York. They just want to reallocate the blame to a federal Lincolnian Leviathan so that they can stay in their shithole dystopian state and still be like these conservative Catholics. That's lame. I care about that issue very much. That's the main issue, procedurally speaking, that Catholics should care about, subsidiarity. That doesn't mean I might not vote for Trump over this. Okay. So at the one hand, I'm saying procedurally, this is just right. But that's not what Trump and Melania are saying. So I think Ed Faeser might end up going in, I think he said, still voting for Trump. I'm like, I'm on both extremes of this. Procedurally, subsidiarity is the only thing that matters. All 50 of the American states are too big to even count as a legit polity by Aristotle and Thomas's standards, right? They said 100,000 citizens in one polity was too big to count morally and ontologically. So even Delaware is probably too big, but still it's better handled at the state level than the federal. It's better handled at the county level than the state. It's better handled at the city level than the county level, and so on and so forth, like Jefferson said. But when it comes to the substantive issue, I'm less forgiving than even Ed Faeser, who might go vote for him on this. I mean, I hear this ad by Melania and what Trump has been saying, slapping me in the face to curry the favor of all the center leftists. That does not go well with this sailor. So here's Melania. And we have to talk about this issue today, substantively and procedurally, to at least justify my extremism on both ends. So here's what Melania said in this retarded ad.
Dual freedom is a fundamental principle
that I safeguard. Without a doubt, there is no room for compromise when it comes to this essential right that all women possess from birth, individual freedom. What does my body, my choice really mean?
Okay, that shows
she's made this video.
She's got a book coming out called Melania. Doesn't she sound like an American actress doing a cheap Eastern European accent? She doesn't sound like she's really from there. I don't know what someone really from there sounds like, but it's just stupid voice, stupid face. We all thought she was Catholic. I'm like this. You'll never get me back. I'm not pro Melania. I'm done with her. Excommunicator quicker than Biden and Pelosi, for all I care. Just do it. I'm done. What do you guys say? What first reactions to hearing that? Nick, you had something.
Well, it took me until about 2 minutes ago that I realized two things. The first is that ad had nothing to do with the election. It was, she thought, in the midst of the upcoming election, now is the perfect time for 29 seconds of pro-abortion propaganda to sell a memoir. And the one advertised at the end of that ad is $250 for a memoir. And the second thing I was noticing, because the video was far enough away from my eyes, this is just purely a technical thing. They just took half of the image and made it darker. I don't know if you can see this, like on the ad.
Yeah,
they're trying to make it look like there's like a shadow dramatic lighting, but they just filmed her normal and then made half of the image darker, so it looks awful.
I noticed that. It's really weird, right? Dark side of her face.
Yeah, yeah, pathetic. It's completely fake. So it's a. Why is she? I don't understand why. Well, I guess kind of get it. And Will sort of brought up this point too, like conservatism isn't even close to real anymore. So like the Trump family, the Trump name now, like what really, really is different. Mm-hmm. This is a point that I've been trying to make for the last year and a half of, I really hate this lesser of two evils argument. When, if you go through all the substantive issues, they're within striking distance of each other. Like abortion is a very, very meaningful issue. So is immigration. The difference between like Harris immigration and Trump immigration is real, but not strong enough he's still pro-immigration. He just thinks like, oh, let's do it legally. It's like we're past that now. And then with Warp Speed, I don't believe that another global crisis can arise and the Trump family can stand in the gap and not fold like they did and shut down the entire United States of America, like every other country did, and completely obliterate our economy and all the small businesses again. Like if there's another COVID, heaven forbid, I don't see there being any sort of difference. So, I mean, the lesser of two evils, it's like less by a rapidly shrinking margin. And it just breaks my heart.
Right. And it's not worth some brat that's slapping you in the face because it's his birthday and is like, no, I can get away with it. I have diplomatic immunity. There's something so satisfying of being like, you know what? You can't. You're gonna piss on me to pick up constituency over here. That doesn't sit well with me personally. You're a man. I'm a man. I'm not going to vote for you if you do that. That wasn't your ticket. Your ticket got punched because you're the anti-politics politician. Maybe I did that with John McCain. And I think I did end up voting for McCain and even Sarah Palin. I wouldn't have voted for a guy that put a woman VP on, you know, once I looked at the sex politics issue. But I think in 2008, I did. But he's John McCain. He's, you know, a Massachusetts Democrat, let alone a Massachusetts Republican. I mean, he is far left. So you know what you're getting there. Trump was not supposed to be the lesser of two evils. Trump was supposed to be that to Hillary and then that to Biden and that to the establishment. He was supposed to drain the swamp. So I'm not going to put up with the same amount that I put up with her. And I totally disagree on this. It's speculation. Melania put this up as part of the campaign, and it's been totally, I think, Trump's attack plan. Other people on Twitter agree with you, Nick, but this is all timed out carefully. And so
I think it's relevant to the election. I just meant that they're pretending it's not. She's not saying that that's like, therefore, register to vote for like Donald Trump. It was supposedly for her book thing. I just thought that it was under the auspices of the election, forward facing. And it took me until, you know, a few minutes ago to realize she's, quote unquote, selling a book off of like, look how pro woman, pro freedom I am. I also think it's so ironic. She's like, women have these rights from the moment that they're born. It's like, you're making sure they never get rights. You're ensuring women don't get rights because you're killing them before they're born.
Yeah, but she didn't.
But just wait, guys.
Yeah,
but just wait. Have you seen the recent QAnon drop, guys? Just wait. Just wait. Just wait. Just keep waiting, and just keep waiting because it's going to be biblical. But you just, in the meantime, just keep waiting. Just dude, a bunch of this is retards.
It's his ultimate plan to save more babies is aborting them first, but they're holographic babies. Yeah.
Just wait. Just wait, no, bro. That's
such a good point, Mike. Because you know, in 1920, I started to really get on the Q train. And I was like, well, if there's a deep state, maybe there's the opposite. There's a good cohort. And, you know, why wouldn't Donald Trump be sort of at the forefront of this? But then the greatest paradox was Warp Speed for me. The person who spent as much time as possible trying to understand the implications of the COVID shot, I was like, okay, so he either is unaware, in which case he's not like master commander far side of the world, or he is aware, in which case he's horribly evil. But at least he's trying to save the children or whatever. It's like, well, I guess not anymore. on every substantive issue, he's not the guy. He's not the guy.
And he was never going to be. You can go back onto when we first started CMASC a couple of years ago, and I was pointing out that Trump is one of the most pro-LGBTQ presidents in history. He was never going to drain the swamp. He's the swamp monster, right? There's a deep state, and he's going to just give it to you deeper and deeper. It's just a very effective way of doing it. And I think Melania understands by promoting that book that this isn't really like an election with her book added on. the whole thing, the whole political project is now just business.
Like
both parties, this is business now. This is money making and power grabs. What about this? Maybe the last time there was really a culture war in America that meant anything was 1861.
Yeah.
Right? That was it. Ever since then, it's just basically been an agreement on all the fundamentals, and it's been petty, minor squabbles about nothing substantive.
Yeah. Yeah. 1861, when based Pope Pius IX sided with, I was having Nick read up on this earlier in the week, just for, because he was down near Jefferson Davis's birth home, which is like an hour from our houses here. You know, 1861, I absolutely agree. This is when culture and politics actually mattered. Men actually fought and died for what they believed in. This is when Pius IX basically sided with the American Confederacy. Yeah, you heard that right. Sent a letter. He's the only American, he was the only worldwide sovereign or head of a political state that acknowledged Jefferson Davis as president. And he wrote him a beautiful letter. What a lot of people don't know is that, of course, in 1861, also, there was another northerly, evil, tyrannical incursion into a southerly sovereign body where they stole lands and told them what to do unjustly. And that was in Italy, the Risorgimento. Fascinating, fascinating stuff. The general who was holding Pius IX at the tip of a sword and ended up stealing a bunch of his lands and forcing him unjustly into the liberal northerly union of the Kingdom of Italy was named Garibaldi. Garibaldi was a Freemason who hated the church. He did the bidding of a bigger, more NWO Freemason. I'm going to do a show on the Risorgimento soon. And guess who tried to conscript him a year later, I think in spring of 1862, into the American army, the Northern army. It was Lincoln. Lincoln was like, I want you to do to the Confederacy what you just did in the name of pissing all over subsidiarity, what you just did to Pope Pius IX and to the Vatican City State, you know, forced them at the point of a sword into Italy. He tried to get Garibaldi. Garibaldi was, you know, like Lincoln was friends with Marx. He was friends with Garibaldi, huge liberal, hated American subsidiarity, hated what America really stood for, which was states' rights. And, you know, so he was a tyrant. And yeah, you're not going to get that history in school, but Catholics, you know, you shouldn't like Lincoln. The point is, I don't know. I feel a similar kind of energy coming off Trump where it's like, hey, before I thought he was saying he was going to do things that were populist right wing from too large a platform. I'm like, no, I have procedural problems with that. Now he's trying to curry favor with the center left, and I have substantive problems with it. I guess we should spend some of this show distinguishing how a Catholic, I believe, should have these two views on abortion procedurally and substantively. But I mean, like, all of you guys have said good stuff. He just react to the fact that Will did all along, but I don't know. I kind of bought in 2016. I'd said he's lifelong pro-abortion because he was whatever then in his 70s, lifelong New York leftist guy who had always supported Democrats until a certain point he flipped, which was recent with respect to when he ran for the presidency in 2016. But he seemed legit. It seemed like a legit flip, and he was speaking off the cuff. We just come off of 8 years of Obama and the teleprompter. And no Republican candidate for all my lifetime had a corpuscle of charisma. And then Trump's just making fun of Ted Cruz's ugly wife. And he's saying that, you know, he's making fun of this guy because he calls him retarded. And he's making fun of Rand Paul's hair. I'm like, I do love this guy. You know, I don't think he understands the Constitution or philosophy that well, but he is off the cuff. He has obliterated that in order to pick up what? 3% more of the popular vote, 1.5% more of the popular vote. I just want to acknowledge that I think that's what's going on here. And I might not vote for him.
Do you guys know that letter that Lincoln wrote to the New York Tribune editor, Horace Greeley, That really? Line, yep. When he admits what the war was really about, it reminds me of Trump posing as someone who really cares about politics, but deep down maybe doesn't. Listen to this. This is August 1862. I still think that 1861 was a genuine culture war, but this is still interesting to read because it suggests maybe slavery wasn't what he cared about. My paramount object in this struggle is to save the Union. And it's not either to save or to destroy slavery. Not told that in school, like Tim says. If I could save the Union without freeing any slave, I would do it. And if I could save it by freeing all the slaves, I would do it. And if I could save it by freeing some and leaving others alone, I would also do that. What I do about slavery and the colored race, I do because I believe it helps to save the Union. So slavery wasn't really the ultimate crux of the war for him. It was the Union political control, which largely comes down to trade and taxation. That's what was really at stake there.
But will the mean racist white guys in the North or in the South were fighting the mean racist white guys in the North, but the mean racist white guys in the North were just less racist. That's how America was born. It was born on the backs of that. That's amazing. I've never heard that before.
Really? That I even heard in school. Now, Horace Greeley was a committed Marxist. He loved Marx. Marx and Lincoln basically corresponded through Greeley. Marx published in the New York Times. And they're big fans of each other. Because I guess we should talk about the procedural aspect of abortion, meaning, why does subsidiarity matter? Marxists always like globalism or quasi-globalism. What I want people out there to consider is, you know, people that are reciting the last book of the Bible to know that part of the apocalypse, I just did the show on the apocalypse on Wednesday, is one world, one new world order that the Antichrist will galvanize. And they know that that's bad. Globalism's bad. Every based Money Moicano knows that, you know, he's an MMA fighter. He also reads Hans Hermann Hoppe. It turns out that's surprising, but so globalism bad. What cracks me up is people that have had the sense of subsidiarity, the idea that sovereignty and localism are mutually constitutive. You can't have moral or ontological political sovereignty that's not local, and you can't have moral or ontological political localism that's not sovereign. That they're mutually constitutive, which is, everyone knows this. Every kid that's, you know, fifth grader playing in a basketball league will complain if the ref makes the call from across the court, you know, like, hey, this ref didn't see it, he's standing right by me. That's all subsidiarity is. You have the right to make the call when you're there. You don't have the right to make the call from across the court or the globe. Basic. It's basic, basic, basic. But as it relates to this issue, it's really important because people are like, well, this is the murder of babies. Doesn't this violate, doesn't this invoke the violation of the one rule? No, it doesn't. Literally, the local polity, the state, has the power. And this is always how it was before Roe versus Wade in 1973. All the red states had abortion illegal. All the blue states had it legal. If you want to live in a good polity, move to a red state, vote with your feet. It's the fundamental organizing principle of civil society is that your neighbors should not want to cut your throat and you know, your kids' throats. It's stupid. Whereas guys like Sohrab Ahmari in New York, who I guess is he calls himself a conservative Catholic. He's been on every side of every issue in the last 10 years. Ed Fazer, you know, very conservative Catholic, wants to keep living in Pasadena in Southern Cal. So they just say, let's get Leviathan Lincoln's ghost to do it. You know, let's just get Lincoln to free all the slaves and force everyone to be in the Union, and let me legislate from basically a world away. And this is why I bring up the point. And I think I went through this with Freedom Tunes when I had him on my show. Okay, so globalism's bad, right? What about one hemisphere government? Is that bad too? Well, obviously, Aristotle and Thomas Aquinas and Pope Pius XI, who articulated the idea of subsidiarity in 1931's encyclical Quadragesimo Anno, they would say, okay, we can't have two world governments, one for the Western Hemisphere and one for the Eastern Hemisphere. That is globalism. How about a quarter? How about a half of a hemisphere? You know, whatever that is, a quadrosphere, what government for that? No, that's not local. That's basically what America is, guys. A third of a billion people, a third of a billion people. And you want to make the claim that this is a real polity for the Catholic political tradition from proto-Catholic Aristotle all the way through Pius XI and even John Paul II. That's not a legitimate political community. What's the legitimate political community? It should be like the size of a big neighborhood or a city, a polis. That's why all of our political jargon comes from the polis, political, populace. This all has to do with the polis, the size of a legitimate political community where you can actually surround yourself in amity and concord with people that believe as you do, which is what you're supposed to do. Like, diversity is fake and gay. Your res publica is supposed to be the one thing you hold in common with everyone in your political community. Well, how can we hold something in common with a third of a billion people? Exactly. There's no 350 million people on earth that agree about enough to be a legitimate political community, which is why Aristotle and Thomas cap it at 100,000. So I was talking to Fazer about this on the abortion issue yesterday, not even knowing about Melania Trump. Or her ridiculous message, legitimately pro-abortion message. And, you know, someone else popped up. This is actually my friend Chris Plants popped up in defense of Fazer. Well, you live in Mississippi. That's more than 100,000 people. Well, yeah. So I would, you know, so it's not a fully legitimate political community, but it's closer. Also, we're not murdering babies here. I just want people to understand there are three positions on this abortion issue. There's the position that just says, oh, we should have basically globalism, end all abortions everywhere, which I'm like, I want all abortions everywhere ended, same as in China. It's just none of my business. In California, I moved away from there. It's none of my business. I want them ended in my political community, which is Mississippi, and we're the most conservative state in the union. But this is what I told Ed Fazer. If you're concerned about globalizing the end of abortion, which I am too, I want it done, but through political means, through the ballot, then what you ought to be as concerned about Chinese abortions as Californian abortions. Because the Catholic political tradition says that it's only your political community you care about, and it's impossible for a political community to be bigger than 100,000. So I said that, and then later in the day saw Melania, and I'm like, okay, I might not vote for him. At the level of the substantive issue, Trump and his stupid wife are both pro-abortion and have been their whole lives. Look at him with her hoish modeling career and his, you know, running around laying pipe. Of course, they're pro-abortion. They're old boomers who have led bad lives, and they're immoral people with dark hearts. So of course they are. I won't vote for him substantively there, but if he meant what some of his supporters are saying he meant, just my distinction about substance and procedure on the abortion issue, then of course, yeah, that would be the correct position. Can you guys parse that? Are you guys square with that? Do you guys disagree with that?
I can't imagine a more relevant central issue of our society and culture right now than abortion. I really couldn't care less about what he's going to do. Let's say if I was an American, with taxes or with the economy or with immigration. I mean, immigration is probably the number two thing, the number one thing being abortion, because the reality of it is, and this is why I'm kind of like, well, what's the solution? I don't know. I'm not smart enough to come up with the conclusion there, but we're living in a landscape that's just a post-sexual revolution feminist wasteland, where the major reason a lot of women are showing up to vote is because of abortion.
Yeah.
So you see a lot of people framing this as like a strategic move, which I see as a bit of a capitulation. You know, I think you're kind of conceding ground. But what is the alternative too? Because if somebody were to come out and be staunchly pro-life and even communicate that with any semblance of tact and articulation, well, there's 50% of the country gone. because people are dumb and they don't understand the sanctity of life. Even a lot of Catholics that are pro-abortion Catholics, which makes no sense. So I'm kind of torn. I don't know. And Nick, I know you were saying like you hate the lesser of two evils argument. I hate it too. But then everywhere I go, I kind of run into this wall of this argument yet again.
Yeah, I just don't know if we're allowed to vote for the lesser of two evils because we're trying to preserve the good. Do we as Catholics have a moral obligation to preserve the good by voting for the lesser of two evils?
Right.
I was not going to vote because of 2020 in the election theft. Like I believe it would just be a humiliation ritual for me to stand in line for them to then just change the test questions afterward. Like whatever I answer, they're just going to make it for whatever they wanted it to be anyway. So like, why am I going to do that? Why am I going to put myself through that? But I guess if we pretend for a second, like elections have and have had any integrity, are Catholics obligated to cast a ballot for the lesser of two evils? Does anyone know that answer?
Oh, no, no, you don't. Yeah, you don't have to cast a ballot.
Oh, good. Not sure.
Yeah, that's the difference between doing and allowing action theory. No, I don't. You don't have. I mean, like, look, in 2004, one of his final acts as prefect of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, now the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith, Joseph Cardinal Ratzinger wrote that there are all these fine distinctions on today's show, but that the difference between formal on the abortion issue, the difference between at the ballot box when you're voting for two different for one of two different politicians on the abortion issue, if the animating principle of moving your will, literally the intellectual, the nature, the logos, moving your will on a given politician is something other than abortion, but it's a pro-abortion politician, then so there's like no one that can prove this but you, then it's just you can vote for the pro-abortion politician as the lesser of two evils as long as it is the remote material cause. But if you secretly want that pro-abortion politician on behalf of abortion, then it becomes formal cooperation, and you share in the sin that the politician does with the individual murder some women who are killing their babies. So it's a really fine decision. And what people have to understand is the status of your rational will and your intellect as you pull the ballot box on a given pro-abortion politician as the lesser of two evils, literally the status of that finely tuned set of circumstances matters even to your own salvation. So while you can pull yes, for a lesser of two evils candidate, which Trump, I guess, would be here, it's not as open and shut as you're thinking. Because if somehow you're secretly a little soft on abortion and you vote for pro-abortion Trump, then now you might be going to hell for it. So no, by no means, this is like permissive, not mandatory, that you can vote for an evil politician like Trump, an evil windbag who is actually pro-abortion. You just have to be really careful. But if you're like me and you're like, I don't even know, I don't even trust the guy. I don't have to pull the ballot for the person I think is less. Maybe I think the less evil is me not being the F involved. And that's just where I'm getting with this. Once you draw my moral disgust, it's done. I just want to read, this is a little bit unruly of me. Sorry. I just want to read another 1870s New York Times article. This is really interesting. On August the 18th, 1876, New York Times ran an article about, because people might be scratching their head, Pius the Ninth's letter to Jefferson Davis. Don't confuse him. The author of subsidiarity, the first person that coined the term in the 1931 encyclical, was Pius the 11th. This is Pius the Ninth, the circulator of the Syllabus of Errors. Pius the Ninth wrote that letter to Jefferson Davis. You can go read the letter. It's up in New Orleans in the museum, where he expressed great sympathy that they, lost and he was the only sovereign who called him president. About that letter, this article is headlined, "A Relic of the War and How the Pope Recognized the Southern Confederacy, His Letter to Jefferson Davis." The article described how Dudley Mann had forwarded to Davis, Jefferson Davis, the formidable Latin document, which is nothing less than a recognition of the government of the Confederate States. In Northern Italy, you know, the Northern Italians were liberals, same as Lincoln in the Northern, you know, the American North at the time represented liberals. According to a letter from Ambassador Marsh, so these are Union people, to Secretary of State Seward, these are northerly Union people. Quote, "Even so unimportant a circumstance as the recent publication of the correspondence between Jefferson Davis and the Pope has produced an impression quite favorable to us." And here, so Marsh is saying to Seward, both of these are, you know, Lincoln acolytes, and Lincoln's dead at this point. What they're saying is the sympathy between Jefferson Davis, the southerly, you know, leader of the South in America, and Pope Pius IX, the leader of the South Italy, both of whom were basically subdued and forced into this liberal, you know, Leviathan, huge continent-sized polity, Italy or America. He said that's very favorable to us, liberals of the North. You know, liberals always want more and more landmass. They always want something closer to globalism. He said this is really based. It shows Catholics, you really can't like Lincoln or his acolytes because they hated the Catholic Church, you know, and supported Garibaldi and all that. Marsh went on to point out that, quote, "among the friends of progress, the libs in the North, and of the federal cause in Italy," quote, "the letters between Jeff Davis and Pio Nono are thought by many to show that between the great enemy of African liberty in America and the great enemy of all liberty in Europe," this is how Lincolnites refer to the Catholic Church, "a sympathy exists which is not shared by the people of the North or the government which represents it." So boom, Catholics, stop being gay for Lincoln. Sorry, I know this is sort of off topic, but I just wanted to get that. Conversely, greatest American ever, General Robert E. Lee, of the Confederate general, he said, oh, the only one who loved our poor Confederacy now defeated was the blessed Pope. He carried around a picture of the Pope. Bishop Lynch in New Orleans was a huge Confederate leader, and he corresponded daily with prelates from Italy. Obviously, the South was the representative of subsidiarity, which is the Catholic teaching. And there, it was just very, very favorable to the Catholic point of view. They loved the Pope there. A lot of their wives were Catholic in legitimate ways. Like, I think Jefferson Davis's wife is just, it's not the story you hear in school, but I just wanted to take a second to point that out, since there's always this preternatural comparison on the tip of the tongue between abortion and slavery. I want to point out that they're actually not great analogs.
Nick, in answer to your question about whether there's a duty to vote, I was just looking up some stuff in the moral theology manuals. This is interesting. There is a grave duty of using the privilege granted to citizens of voting in public elections, and especially primaries, for the welfare of the community and the moral, intellectual, and physical good of individuals depend on the kind of men who are nominated or chosen to rule. And then they continue with a few qualifications. The duty is not one of commutative justice, as the ballot is either a privilege or a thing commanded by authority, but not a service to which the citizen has bound himself by contract or office. The obligation is therefore one of legal justice, arising from the fact that the common weal is everybody's business and responsibility, especially in a republic. So here's the interesting bit, and it's super important for what Tim was saying about, well, maybe the real lesser evil is just Tim not voting or Nick not voting. That's the lesser evil. Here's why. Representatives of the people who by abstention from voting cause a serious damage, which they were bound ex officio to prevent, are guilty of commutative injustice and are held to restitution. But a citizen who stays away from the polls sins, and perhaps gravely, against legal justice, though there is no duty of restitution for the damages that result. Moreover, in a general election, the vote of one citizen is usually not of decisive influence, and citizens do not make themselves responsible for all the acts of their representatives. So that's similar framing to what Tim was saying with the lesser evil might just be not voting, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I have another guy saying basically the same thing. This is on CNA to provide some insight into this instant question. CNA's Spanish language news partner spoke with Fray Nelson Medina, a Dominican priest who holds a doctorate in fundamental theology from the Milltown Institute in Dublin, and Mario Arroyo, who holds a doctorate in philosophy from Pontifical University of Holy Cross in Rome, Santa Croce. Scott works some with them, Nick. So elections and the common good. The general criterion for the Christian is always that his action, this is what's binding on us. And you're going to be like, well, how does this apply? His action or decision not to act leads to or favors, at least does not hinder achieving the common good. The latter phraseology is more important for Thomists, does not hinder the common good. In countries where voting is mandatory, it seems that abstaining from voting is incurring at least nominally in a crime. And of course, it's not mandatory here anyway, but it's difficult to see how this could be ordered for the common good. Adding that for the same reason, we exclude from this analysis people who, out of laziness or not to bother, abstain from voting. There's clearly no correct moral motivation there. The Dominican theologian said that where it is not obligatory to vote, and once laziness or simple convenience has been excluded, it is clear that the only purpose that could be valid for abstaining from voting is to protest that the election process itself is corrupt due to evident fraud or inevitable fraud, or to reject all candidates due to their ineptitude or low moral quality.
Those are the two reasons why I would do it.
Yeah, of course. Those are literally the two reasons I might not vote in a month.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it's in a month.
It's in a month. It's like a day or two over 1 month.
That's snuck up on me. Wow, that's crazy. Yeah, the timing of Melania's thing too was, of course, in tandem with Trump's tweet about I'm never going to do a federal abortion ban. They really are just trying to scoop up as much as they can. What I don't understand, this is sort of side topic, this is something that Tim, you and I have talked about for a while now, is I don't know how long, if ever, it has been the case that the numbers that are collated at the tens of thousands of little computers around the country have ever actually mattered about what shows up on the little tickers on CNN and Fox News that night. I have no idea. And there's no way that it's been, could be proven to the American people, because when it mattered most, there wasn't an audit. When everybody was, whatever the answer is, I have what I think is the answer, but whatever the answer was about 2020, there wasn't an audit. There wasn't a peek behind the curtain to show every person, when Nick Stumphauser and Tim Gordon pencil in the little Scantron box and put it inside the voting machine, that is one of the numbers that shows up on TV later that night. I don't believe that that's what happens. And I don't know how long it's been the case that that doesn't happen. So I am frustrated by this, what I feel is a humiliation ritual, that people of good moral character who are striving to be virtuous are being asked to pretend to bring into office one of two people, both who honestly just want to kill babies and destroy countries.
That's why the recognition of politics as business is really important. And the French philosopher Pascal talked about how the fall is prior to politics. right? Politics can't save you because it is itself infected by concupiscence and the reality of fallen human nature. So stop looking to the so-called culture war, which is really just two people who don't disagree over fundamentals, to save you. The salvation isn't going to come from the political order.
Yeah, so I feel like there's more of an obligation for Catholics of good character pursuing greater virtue to stop debating about, like, I think the issues of feminism, of chastity, of homeschooling. Like, what if instead of all these Catholics being like, I guess I'll vote for Trump, they all just decided to make sure their wives aren't working and their kids were schooled inside of the home? I feel like that would make a significantly greater difference to the country.
Yeah.
To us, like, walking around the streets of this country than, like, the price of gas.
In Chrysostom's homily on Romans, he has this sledgehammer point. He says, I beseech you, flee fornication. Why sow where the ground makes it its care to destroy the fruit? Where there are many efforts at abortion, where there is murder before the birth. For even the harlot thou dost not let continue, a mere harlot, but makest her a murderess also. So if you look what happened with the sexual revolution, fornication skyrockets, so does abortion, because they go hand in hand. So Nick, your point there about how can you really make a difference? Wives working inside the home. Yeah, for sure. But even before that, all the single guys just rejecting the feminist framing that fornication is fun. That's Chrysostom's point there. You're already violating the rights of the child through fornication, contraception, which Aquinas ranked just below murder. Contraception and murder are twinned. Because if you prevent life, you'll also take it.
The Naturalization Act of 1790 comes to mind a lot when discussing voting. Like, oh, should women have the right to vote? It's like, first of all, let's pretend like elections are real. If elections are actually real, the stipulations for becoming a United States citizen, like having the right to vote and stuff, landowning, white man of good character. This is what you had to be at the start of this country in order to have your opinion even matter. So forget the landowning, forget the race for a second. Let's just start with good character. I don't care about your opinion. I don't want your opinion being pulled in with my opinion and then just like averaging it out. If, to Tim's point, there's 350 million people and 340 million of them I probably disagree on everything of substance about. This is nonsense. I think probably we're in probably the vast majority of the Benedict option is something that I've vaguely heard about, considered, toyed with on my own. And because we're so far gone in the country and in the world, I mean, it's not just the United States. We're actually probably the last bastion. I mean, Western Europe is gone. New Zealand and Australia are gone. Canada's gone. None of these places are ever coming back. And we're right behind them. I think we do have some more buffer just because we are so big. There's more inertia. It's harder to govern 350 million people in rural areas who all have guns. That is one benefit of a country this size. But given that there is like the whole emphasis on politics as the salvation of the family or of the polis at this size is sort of pointless. It does seem, I'm curious if you guys agree, that the best thing to do, I think Ripperger kind of said this to me as well. It's like, it doesn't matter what Francis is doing. It doesn't matter what Trump or Kamala are doing, to an extent, to the extent that you have any control over it, obviously it would be better if things were better. I understand that. But in the world that we live in, things aren't better. So stop trying to lean on the world to make your environment a better place, like homeschool your kids.
Right.
Find some job that makes it so your wife can stay home with them. Don't be feminists inside of the house. Make sure your kids aren't fornicating. And like, who gives a damn about everything else?
Do you see how natural the orienting instinct is for most of these people to try to reallocate blame for their own like bad lives? You see, what this means is that subsidiarity is always under attack. Subsidiarity is always like locality and sovereignty are mutually constitutive. Like basically the real political community, the catechism says this, is the household. You shouldn't really even need much outside the household. Nick, you know how my family lives. We don't homestead. The only thing we leave the house for is to get food or maybe to come visit you since you've been living here for the last almost year. We don't really leave for other things. And like, yeah, I know homesteaders can do it without leaving the house at all. That wouldn't enable us to, you know, as a family, play so many video games, watch so many movies. That's the only reason. So we stopped to go to the store, but it shouldn't really matter what your neighbors are doing. They should be the type of people you can go, you know, they're not going to kill babies if they get the chance. All my neighbors have Trump flags up, you know, they love guns and God. They're all Baptists. So that's proper to have those neighbors. So, and I do have some very nice neighbors that I like. My next door neighbor, I got a friend across the way here. Nick, you know some of them. They're very trustworthy people. So that's there, but I'm not depending on them. But the orienting impulse in all of these folks, call it the Sohrab Ahmari impulse, is he's such a poser. He wants to stay living in New York. Can you imagine that? And he's just like, I just want Lincoln. I want a globalist tyrant to come in and tell us all how to live, even though my reality, Dasein, right? The German expression, Dasein, being there. What my reality is what's around me. Jesus always talked about your neighbors. That just means people that live near you. I live around a bunch of goons that want to kill babies and let in illegal immigrants and think Marx is cool and think Jesus is, made up or evil. But I want to have this virtual political reality whereby I get to keep living here because I like tall buildings or whatever. I like Manhattan that just basically puts me in the matrix and makes me believe through violations of subsidiarity that I don't live in this Sodom and Gomorrah political community of New York. Your political community is like your neighborhood. That's all it is. Thus ever it shall be. That's what I was trying to impart to Ed Faeser. So when people take it to this abortion issue, as militant as I am about, okay, Trump and Melania have shown that substantively they're actually pro-abortion. I might not vote for him now in a month. I don't know. I'm not committing one way or the other yet. If you know, the procedure is correct. And I got into this with Faeser about a month ago. As soon as this topic came up about a month ago with the national abortion ban, I was like, wait a minute. If you define competency, the most competent local government, the smallest sphere government that's competent to adjudicate an issue or legislate it should do it. If you define competency as 100% of them do it, then that you're not going to have that anywhere. I mean, by definition, American 50 states are competent to do it. And the proof is that like 25 of them or 30 of them have done it. They outlawed it. The second of Dobbs versus Jackson City Health, Women's Health. So if guys that want that hate subsidiarity, like Ahmari or I guess Faeser's come out very strongly anti-subsidiarity, which is weird. If they want to define competency as no, it has to be 50 out of 50 states or else we move the adjudication, the legislative field to the next least less local issue adjudicator, which would be the Fed. Then check this out. If America as a nation were to have some emperor come in and ban abortion on a national level, well, that wouldn't be good enough. That's just the equivalent of a state unless all 230 countries in the world have abortion. That would mean you have to push it to the one world government level. So they're all, if you run their thought experiment as to what constitutes competency, adjudicative competency, then it makes it very clear it's globalism. Yeah. Because it's like, hey, 30 of the 50 American states outlawed abortion. Move to one of them, or you kind of do share in that abortion, even though not formally. You can be a Catholic Californian like Ed Faison. It's just like, well, I'm here. I don't like it. I vote for pro-abortion policies. Okay, but you share in it in a realer way than I do because my political community outlawed it. So move to one of those states. If you say, no, it needs to be 50 out of 50, or else that's not competent, then it needs to, by your own logic, it needs to be 230 countries out of 230. If there's one pro-abortion country in the world, then that means we need to move the adjudicative competency to one world government that just outlaws abortion. And by the way, that's never going to happen. It's not moral. It's not possible. It's not even ontologically consistent with the definition of what a polity is.
You've either got patriarchy alongside subsidiarity or the beginnings of some kind of totalitarian police state. And this is why the ancient Greek and Roman political philosophers thought that the father, the patriarch, was the only person in principle capable of identifying with the general interests of the people, which is why people sometimes say that what we do on CMASQ isn't really achieving anything, right? We need to be out there running for office or something. But actually, patriarchy is some of the most important political action you can take because it's a sphere of influence that we all have that is vitally important because the family is the foundation of society. And the way Tim is framing that, run the thought experiment out, he said, it gets you to see that really clearly. I've got to head off because I've got another call and it's going to end when I go, guys. But there's been a good show today. And I hope people see that patriarchy and the political change that we need are linked. An American who did talk some sense on this topic, I know we've mocked him before, is Emerson. And he talked about how the soul of reform is reform of soul, right? Nice line from him. Is in you and in your family.
Will, do you have 15 seconds for me to squeeze one?
Yeah,
point
go, out? Go.
I'm noticing a theme with this, which is that it's the curse of Adam through and through from start to finish. Men want to legislate the environment to be conducive to them as opposed to just doing the hard work. It's the same reason why red pill guys want to change divorce laws. If we just legislated women to stay and love us, everything would be okay. And they just don't want to do the work.
Yeah.
So I think that's the same thing with this. No man, no patriarch just wants to do the work that would actually change the country.
Somebody force her to submit to me. Give me a bit of paper. Force her to submit. She wouldn't. Even if you had it in your hand, she wouldn't. She'd laugh at you for waving the piece of paper.
It's the exact same thing. Yeah, a reallocation to a larger sphere of authority that'll get done what you ought to be able in your own life. I would just close. My closing statement is in 2020, a lot of people don't know, I was originally on the Trump Catholic Steering Committee, and Jared Kushner allegedly vetted me off for anti-Semitism. So based for me.
Good show, guys. Speak next week. God bless.
God bless you guys.